strong force concept. You know, on Wikipedia, it's talking about gluons and little light particles holding things together. I'm guessing those all happen by random chance at a Big Bang.
That gluons would happen by random chance in the Big Bang?
Right. That's obvious.
Oh, I mean, well, I don't know exactly what you're asking. So,
I'm being facetious.
Yeah, you're being facetious. No, I mean, yeah, the argument is, it's kind of like this. If the forces aren't balanced in such a way, things won't hold together. And so the strong force is one of those forces that has to have a particular value. Otherwise, you won't have fusion in stars. Yeah, but it, yeah, definitely look it up on Wikipedia, learn about it, and people will talk about how it has to be within certain limits. This paper, I can put the slides up later. I guess we can post them on your website. The paper that I make reference to, you touched on the 18 arbitrary constants and their value in your daily life, that talks about the strong force for sure. Yeah?
How would you explain how God was not created?
How God was not created. Yeah, that's a tough one, right? Okay, so you might say, all right, yeah, something had to create God. The way people usually get around that is they say that everything that we know of that came into being had something to cause it and start it, okay? If that's all we'll ever admit, that system of thought will lead to an infinite regress. So that system of thought by itself can't be consistent, because then nothing would ever start, right? So you have to have at least one thing that wasn't created to initiate everything else, if you believe in that series of thoughts. So that actually points to something that was uncaused. What was it? I don't know. You know, and then you have to look at all sorts of other evidence and so forth. But that's a really good question. Yeah. Yeah.
While science and religion may sometimes be able, like as you argue, to coincide, from a historical standpoint, do you ever see some issues with arguing for religion if certain historical findings would disprove some parts of the Bible?
So should we modify our views on the Bible if science comes up with something? Is that kind of...
From a historical standpoint, if like historians find parts of the Bible true.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so... Yeah, we certainly should take that into account. Okay, so but let me give you a little cautionary tale. All right, so a while back, people said there's no evidence that Pontius Pilate existed in Palestine at the time the Bible said he did. This is wrong. Okay, and so a lot of people during mid to early 20th century, they were very doubtful of the authenticity of, let's say, the Book of Luke. And then they found there was some sort of amphitheater, and one of the stones was being recycled. They pulled it out and had an inscription on it that basically put Pontius Pilate at the place the Bible said. So then they go, oh, well, no, our bad, we're wrong. There's actually a number of those types of things that happen. Okay? Now, I'm not going to say that the Bible is always going to be correct. I believe that it probably will be always correct. But you're going to find evidence at one point or another that will look like it might contradict it. Okay? And I would say, let's kind of think about this. There was an article that came out in the New York Times probably over the past year that said something like, look, we found evidence of the Canaanites. Here's a burial site of Canaanites in such and such a location. The Bible said they were wiped out by that time. And then a whole bunch of people, I watched the comments section, they said, this is just clickbait. The New York Times shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff. You've got to do your research. And then they cited all these verses that said the Canaanites weren't completely driven out. So I think there's a huge amount of pressure right now for people to put up stories that would, let's say, refute the Bible really quickly and in a facile manner. What I would caution against is just seeing that and going, oh yeah, that's it. And sometimes the evidence won't show up for years. Maybe it won't ever show up. And then you're left in a situation, well, should I believe this or not? To some extent, my faith is based on trust. I've seen enough good things to say, okay, even if you don't prove everything, I'm willing to go with that. Is that sort of answering your question, or do you have more?
I just think more of like some... examples such as Paul existing or living about 100 years after Jesus, but being one of the main people promoting Christianity and Jesus. I just find that to be a little bit of a historical.
So if there's evidence that Paul existed much later than, let's say, the letters that are dated, 50 AD to 1st and 2nd Corinthians, if he existed 100 years after that, then he didn't write these. Yeah, that would be evidence that would discount this. So I would want to see that evidence. Do you have it?
On hand.
Okay, but you can find it. Can you send me an email?
I would love
I'd be happy to look at it. I've actually heard a few things about that. Now, as with most of these things, right, there's lots of discussion that can go on. Right. So, yeah, but those should definitely be looked into and weighed, and if you feel that the evidence evidence contradicts the Bible, then why would you believe the Bible? That's a rational decision. I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
So, with artifacts, like, it's just like, we don't know what it's called, like the Venus of Poles belt, and it's like carbon dated back to like 40,000 BC. And the genealogy in the Bible that leads from David, or from Adam to David, and then David to Jesus, being less than like 10,000 years.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Yeah. What do we do with that, right? So there shouldn't be any people there. Well, so there's lots of ways that people are trying to deal with this. So there's this book by Francis Collins called The Language of God, and he starts talking about those kinds of things. He doesn't believe there was a literal Adam. So he thinks that actually there were all kinds of peoples of one sort or another that lived for a long time before this period. And then at some point, he thinks that perhaps God said, okay, now I'm going to give you certain properties that make you more human-like. I don't know. But yeah, I would say you can carbon date that, and it's old. Right? This is that sort of statue that's like this. Yeah, I've seen it. So I don't know quite how to handle that. But I wouldn't throw the evidence out. The way I'm handling it right now is like, yeah, there's evidence for that. I don't know exactly how to handle human prehistory. When you go way back to drawings in caves in France that are, you know, 40,000 years old. I wouldn't just blow that off. I'm not going to say, oh, no, that's stupid. We shouldn't look at that. I don't know how to figure that out. Now, maybe Adam is more metaphorical, and maybe, you know, the time from Adam all the way up to, I don't know, even Cain and Abel is longer than we thought. I'm not really sure. I don't know yet. Yeah. And so this is something that, it's a good question. Yeah.
What is science, like, would say about, like, miracles?
Yeah. Good question. So miracles are usually one-off events, right? The things that happen, like, oh, wow, I saw it. It happened to me. Science has to have things be repeatable. So we had Jill Tarter, who was the head of SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. She came to IU, she gave a talk. And I thought I'd give her an interesting question. I said, what if you got a transmission on your radio dishes that occurred on all radio dishes, you could localize it to a certain spot, and it was a Robert Frost poem. Boom, boom, boom. But then it never appeared again. What would you do with that? And she said, I wouldn't report it. I said, why not? And she said, because science has to be repeatable. Now, what I should have asked her, but I didn't ask her, is would it change your view about life in the universe? Would it cause you to start searching more in that area? Would it affect you in any way? Science can't publish non-repeatable results. On the other hand, such things happen. So this movie, Contact, I don't know if you've seen it, with Jodie Foster. So it's a book written by Carl Sagan, and what she does is she goes through a very deep personal experience, but she can't share it with anybody else, and yet it affects her views on things. And I would say miracles are kind of like that. Science knows this much, and how much there is to know is maybe bigger than this room. Okay? So it's always been the practice of people to think that what we know now is all there ever is to know. A simple example is something called ball lightning. So it's this form of lightning. When lightning strikes a plane or something, little tiny balls can fall and run across the floor. People reported this, and they go, ah, you're out of your gourd. This is stupid, it's dumb, shut up, it's superstition. Until they reproduced it in the lab, until they got videos of it, and then they're coming up with theories on how to reproduce it. So things that happen that we can't explain in today's science are often written off, they're discounted, until you know how you can explain something. So I think that's one of the common things that goes on. So I think we ought to be open to all kinds of things. I don't think that what we know in science right now is all there is to know. That historically would be a losing bet to take. Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you, like, discuss, like, do you use the metaphor principle for, like, ages of people in the Old Testament, like Noah being 500?
Yeah, what about Methuselah, 900 such and such?
Yeah.
That's a good one. I don't know yet. I mean, it seems to be giving us a date that actually means something. Okay? It seems to be that, yes, there is somebody who actually lived that long. The other thing that seems to be going on is that when sin entered the world, if you look at Genesis, people start falling apart in various ways, both morally and also physically in some way. Disease, all sorts of other things spread. I don't know yet how to handle that. So I don't have a quick and easy answer for that. But do you have any ideas?
Oh, no, I was just curious.
Yeah, okay. I'm curious too. I don't know. And that's one of the things I'm kind of holding in suspension. Yeah.
Do you have a process or a rigor you follow to determine those parts of the Bible you consider literal versus those you consider figurative?
Yeah, yeah. Really good question. You must have a background in law, right? Yeah. So, I think if it has the ring of eyewitness testimony, it seems like it, and if it's giving factual details, or particular details that don't need to be there, maybe it is. Maybe it is something that's saying, yes, this actually happened. So, like, did the Red Sea actually part? It seems like it did. It seems like that is a factual account of something. You may not believe it existed or happened or anything like that. Here's the way I deal with this. It sounds like all these things are really hard, and oh my gosh, I can't understand. But if there is a God, and this God created the universe, I think he's got some pretty powerful miracles in his, you know, armamentarium he can pull out. So things like a virgin birth, that's kind of like a parlor trick. Things like parting the Red Sea, that's kind of small too. Now, it just doesn't seem plausible to us today, though, right? I mean, it kind of seems like, wow, that's weird. Or a 900-year-old person, that seems weird. I don't know. So I think the way I kind of deal with it now is I just say, well, I'm pretty sure he can do some pretty amazing things. So these things, I don't know how he did it, but he must have done those things. And so I think a lot of the Bible is literal. Yeah. That question.
Given the importance that Paul places on the tie between Jesus and Adam,
yes.
Don't you think that would point to Adam being a literal human being who was in fact the first of the race, and because of him sin into the world?
Yes, yeah, sure. That's an argument that Tim Keller also advocates. He says, so he was dialoguing with Francis Collins. Francis Collins says, oh, Adam is, 20,000 people who lived in the Middle East at a certain time. That's Adam. That's a big acronym. And then what Tim Keller would say is, no, Paul argues that just as sin came into the world through one man and it left through one man, through Jesus, Adam, then it must be one person. Yeah, I don't know yet. I haven't got that figured out. I mean, some of the thorniest problems I have right now are still in Genesis. Don't even get me going in Noah's Ark. I don't know what to think of that right now. Okay? I don't know. But if I come to the belief that there is a God and I've seen enough good things, I still am willing to kind of suspend my belief on some of these other issues. Yeah.
So that's the next. Speaking of macroevolution, is like species evolve from each other. Do you think it is a contradictory Bible?
Do I think it contradicts the Bible?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, like I said at the beginning, there's lots of, the whole Catholic Church fully accepts evolution. Okay. So that's a branch within Christendom that says that macroevolution definitely occurs. Okay. So I don't personally see that as being contradictory with the Bible. That could have been the mechanism by which God created things, and it could be that there's allegory in Genesis to roughly recapitulate that process and talk about it. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like some of my friends will say that it doesn't seem like the human actually evolved from like primates.
Yeah.
But so in this case, that doesn't seem like species actually evolved from each other. It seems like God created them all at once. But I mean, personally, I mean, I cannot speak for every single Christian, but personally, I feel like, evolution, macroevolution is a very fascinating theory, and there are a lot of really great, background information behind it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very consistent theory, and there's a lot of evidence if you look at the genomes that such things did occur. So I'm not going to throw that out. I think it did happen.
So that is like, I cannot find it, like, a reason to believe myself that, macroevolution does not happen. But I mean, I definitely know a decent amount of people who think macroevolution is not correct.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sure. Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
When you talk about Genesis and evolution, are you referring to Genesis as strictly creation or the entire book of Genesis?
Oh, no, I didn't necessarily mean to say that the entire book of Genesis is metaphorical. I mean, I do believe that Abraham, Joseph, Isaac, all these guys existed. I do believe that.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't know how to take the first few chapters.
Okay.
I don't know. And what I would also argue is it's not just me. Within Christendom, there's a wide range of different things.
And then my next question was going to relate to that. Whereas, like, where exactly do you, and you kind of answered this in the previous question, where do you kind of draw that line between Adam and Eve, metaphorical, to Abraham, Isaac?
You should really ask someone with a divinity degree, like this guy over here. I don't profess to be someone who knows how to read the scripture deeply. I try to read it, I read commentaries, I read a lot of stuff, but I mean, Bob would probably be able to better answer some of those questions. But yeah, there should be a system of deciding what is literal, what's not, or trying to decide those things. I agree. I don't have that worked out yet at all. Yeah?
Back on the macroevolution idea, how would you say that coincides with like Genesis accounts saying God created like plants and animals according to their own kind?
Right.
Like, that phrasing specifically.
Yeah. Because there it seems like each one is being brought into being by itself, right? Right there it starts as this kind. Yeah. Well, I don't know exactly. There's a lot I don't know. Hopefully that's obvious at this point. And what I would say is, I don't feel that because it says brought it into being as this kind, that that had to happen right then and there. It could have taken place over many years, for all I know. I don't know. But it did eventually result in a distinct kind. How long it took or by what path it took, I don't know. Yeah.
So what do you think? I hear people say a lot in response to a lot of these questions. What I've heard is, well, you know, the Bible is not intended to be a science book. In other words, Genesis, the account of Genesis was written not with the intent of describing scientifically what occurred, but it is a description of God and our world and the relationships that exist. And so even as you said, you know, you continue on in Genesis and you see God and Abraham, and the point of the story is the relationships.
Sure.
Not a scientific book. So the difference between reading, let's say, an English novel, which describes relationships and what happened, and you can draw conclusions from that, maybe good for your own life, as opposed to reading a science book that, and I'm a nurse, so a science book that describes what's going on in my body and the relationship that, you know, different cells have and how to help that. So I'm just interested in that.
Oh yeah, no, I think that works for me too. I think there's definitely some kind of analogy or metaphorical language going on, and it's really capturing more relationship. Yeah, the bulk of Genesis is about God interacting with individuals. Yes, I think that's an excellent point. So it doesn't seem to me to have been written as a science textbook. Yeah, I would agree. But it does definitely describe relationships. Yeah, totally. Yes?
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the alternative explanation of multiverse.
Yeah.
Saying it's a radical move isn't quite an argument, and I'm wondering, is there an argument behind that that you find compelling for why that is not a reasonable explanation, and how does your perspective compare with the broader scientific community?
Yeah, yeah. Sure. No. So string theory, which leads to the multiverse, is now under quite a lot of pressure from a large number of people, many of them atheists, who say the problem with it right now is that it's not leading to any testable predictions. Or the predictions seem to be so far off from being tested that we really have no way of evaluating this. It's a system of equations that seems to be pretty beautiful, it's pretty consistent, it makes sense, but science ultimately has to make contact with some sort of reality. The problem with the multiverse hypothesis is that, by definition, we have no way of testing it. We have no way of knowing how to test that, because all the data that you want is in another universe. Well, how do I get there? I don't know. And if you can't come up with a way for me to, you know, tunnel through from one place to another, we'll never be able to test that. So what I mean by radical is it is, from the very outset, proposing something that will never be testable, at least according to conventional ideas.
Does that just put it on par with the argument for the existence of God as well, or do you see that as testable?
Do I see? It's testable in the following sense. I would say, take all the hypotheses of a naturalistic universe, take all the hypotheses of a theistic universe, and then see which ones kind of fit the data better. The data being the overall picture, the fine-tuning, the seeming, to me at least, existence of some objective morals. That seems to imply that some sort of non-material, yet binding somehow for all of us, entity exists. Strict naturalism, strict materialism, I don't know. How can that get there? What do you think?
Not much right now.
Yeah. Again, I don't know. I've been doing a lot of reading and I can't find it. I don't know how you get there from that spot, right? So the usual atheist rejoinder to show me proof of God is do an experiment, or, you know, one of the things Sam Harris likes to say is, let's see if prayer works. let's find somebody who has, I don't know, a shortened limb, and let's get, you know, 50 million people to pray for them, and then the next morning we should see the limb extended. Let's do that experiment. To which I would say, well, do not put the Lord thy God to the test, right? Okay. So what I would say is, every time a little kid comes up and says, I want another candy bar, I want another candy bar, I want another candy bar, I don't believe that you exist unless you give me a candy bar. You know, there ought to be some humility in this. Yes, I appreciate the idea of trying to test these ideas, but I would argue that the better way to see this is to say, here you got a set of hypotheses, and here you got another set. Which one fits the overall data better? That's actually how science gets done. So, for me, the moral, the existence of moral, objective morals, and the fine-tuning, those are really hard for me to explain from a purely materialistic point of view. Yeah?
Yes, so where are these, like, big atheist physicists think matter came from? Like, they believe in the Big Bang.
Yeah.
Where did that initial matter come from?
So, they don't know. They don't know. And so they're not really concerned about it. They just kind of study it. They study how did it expand, and once it expanded, what did it do, and these kinds of things. So, yeah, there's not really, I mean, it's sort of beyond science because we can't do an experiment on that, so we're not going to ask it. Now, that doesn't mean it doesn't mean anything or it's not intriguing or whatever, but there's just no way to test it. And so many people think, if I can't do science on it, I don't want to talk about it. Ludwig Wittgenstein said that. He said, if I can't really do some sort of test or observe it, it's not worth talking about. And then later that had lots of problems. That view called logical positivism is itself not testable. It's the same problem that happens again and again. So let me just take a few more questions because I know other people ought to feel free to go. Actually, feel free to go whenever you want. But I'm willing to stick around as long as people want to ask. Yeah?
I know you said that you were previously an atheist, and I'm just curious in how you, like, changed your whole mindset and how that happened. And I always am very interested in that process and how you became a Christian.
Yeah. When I was a physics major as an undergrad, I just said, I've got to be completely rational. Everything's got to be proved. And then I kept thinking back about Jesus and his character, and I didn't want to give that up. And so as time went on, well...
Did you grow up in the church?
No, I didn't. I grew up in a nominally Christian family. But one day I came down and I said, Mom, Dad, I don't think Jesus was anything more than just a teacher. They're like, that's okay, cool. Can you take out the garbage? You know, it's just like, didn't matter to them one way or the other, right? Okay, so... But I couldn't give up on the character of Jesus. And then... God humbled me, which he still does, and he gave me a really hard time, and I thought, what am I here for anyway? And then I started searching for things, and then I saw this, and I said, yeah, I should pay attention to that. And I really questioned the way I was living. There was one particular moment where I was smoking a joint and passing it on to somebody, and I heard this in the background, I heard this big, screaming thing, and I talked with some guy, and I said, what was that? And he goes, oh, that's from this musical about Jesus, and that's the point where he's on the cross. And then I felt convicted there. I felt like, And so then a bunch of things happened after that, and I started thinking about it, and I said, you know, I should really kind of weigh this more carefully. So, anyway, I can tell you more details later, if you're interested. Yes? So this is a really tough question about how do you justify the ethics of war. I prefer not to touch that one. My main point is just this, that there are some things that we believe that are objectively right and wrong. Let's take a real simple example, killing a baby for no reason. Okay? So let me just say that, let's all agree that that's really a bad thing to do. Those types of things, whether that's right or not, some people have argued a just war, other people have been strict pacifists. I don't know, okay? Yes, it's definitely true that many people have many different opinions on ethics. What I'm interested in for the purpose of this is just that people have opinions on ethics. That people think that there are certain things that we all ought to hold to. How can we explain those things if we're just, as Bertrand Russell said, nothing but co-locations of atoms banging together? It's really hard to get there from this spot. Yeah.
So, I guess
just have a question about order versus disorder.
Yeah.
So you talk about science needing to be repeatable, and miracles are sort of like one-off. And so under the assumption that Earth is a one-off, the fact that life exists on Earth, in your research, I guess, do you look for order or what the disorder has to offer?
Ooh, I don't know how to handle that. I'm usually looking
for... You can keep digging down the rabbit hole, but it's like, you know, how deep you go and what you get at the end.
Well, there was a paper that we put out recently. When the grad student first did it, he did all these different studies and he had all these little facts and things like that. And I said, Nick, it's making my head hurt. Just pick one thing. What's your best result? And let's just write that up into the paper. And that's what he did. So when you publish in science, typically what you're looking for is actually a story. A story that kind of fits in with what everybody else is doing. It says something that will stand out that people will kind of notice and say, okay, that tells me something that was a missing piece to this part over here. I'm always looking for order, but I'm looking for a particular order, an order that will go with the flow of the cooperative project that we're all engaged in science. They kind of, you know, it's a team contribution to the whole overall thing. But there is disorder, right? And I don't know how to, I don't know how to handle that.
John, let me interrupt you. John is gracious and he would stay here for a long time. We'll let him do that on his own, but let's call it to an end in terms of public questions and then let people come up and talk to you individually.
Okay.
And thank you for being here.